This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Mr. Pat Kaywood, chairman of the Washington, D.C. Committee to End the War in Vietnam. Tonight's subject, Why Do I Protest? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Standing by in Washington, D.C. is Mr. Pat Kaywood, a concerned American citizen who is chairman of the Washington Committee to End the War in Vietnam. Mr. Kaywood is an educated man holding his degree in mathematics. Now, if you'd like to ask Mr. Kaywood a question on tonight's topic, Why Do I Protest?, or make a comment, give us a call here at Night Call. Our national Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. And we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Now, our Night Call lines are open, and our operators are on duty, and it's very easy to call us. Now, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges. Now, please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Kaywood, why do you protest?
Well, I suppose many of the youth of today, as myself, started protesting in a way several years ago. Basically, we question the government. That's a premise.
Well, why do you question the government, Pat?
Well, the government, in many cases, has not really been forthright in many issues. I remember the YouTube incident several years ago, and I was pretty young at that time. I was wondering whether President Eisenhower really told the truth. And several days later, we find out that he did not tell the truth. That had quite a shock effect on me. Civil rights was another issue that I finally came to realize contradicted seriously the so-called premises of our society.
What are these premises?
Well, as I read it in grade school and high school, and as I was told it by my church and my parents, this is a democratic society that adheres to the basic traditions of the ethic of the Christian religion, and which, you know, is for individual freedom and things like that. This is supposedly to apply to other countries, and also the issue of democracy. We're supposed to be a democratic country where the people freely participate in the governing of this country, and I always had assumed that that also meant foreign policy. Now I'm of the opinion, and it may be shocking to some people, that there are a large number of people, young people in the United States, who believe that most of these decisions are made by a small number of people in the United States.
Yes, but what about the argument that only the president and the government officials are fit to judge these things because they have more information than the average citizen?
Well, the average citizen really has quite a lot of information. The basic problem with the average citizen getting information is the president and that group of people. In my opinion, I think the newspapers could do a better job, but in many cases, the information that comes straight out of the government is not only misleading, but it's downright contradictory and lies in some cases.
Well, give me an example, Pat.
Well, the whole business during the Diem regime in Vietnam is a good example. Well, the whole case of Vietnam is a good example, but to be more specific, we called it a showcase of democracy. Now, anybody can pick up a history book, and I can name six of them in libraries, where that is laughed at. That it just doesn't fit the facts. It was never a democracy under the American man Diem, and yet you can read publications to this day coming out of the State Department calling South Vietnam a showcase of democracy, one of the worst dictatorships in the history of the world.
All right, so America's made a mistake. But can't you protest this without going to the streets?
Well, how does one protest it? In the first place,
what about letters?
Many of us have written letters for years. It turns out when you talk to the congressman, as I've talked to quite a few, that the basic issues are really not Vietnam or the condition of Negroes in the South or things like that. The basic issue is bread and butter politics. That is, Johnson forces this one through, or Kennedy or Eisenhower, whoever it was. And when you ask a man to stand up, you ask a senator, a congressman to stand up and be forthright. Instead of doing that, he tells you that he's got to finagle. He's got to do this on this issue and that on that issue. And in the case of Vietnam, there's supposed to be one-third of the senators, the so-called silent third, who disagree with the administration's policy on Vietnam. And yet, there's been only really two, maybe three senators who stood up and said what they thought was right. And when I find out why Mr. Morris, Senator Morris, is able to do this, I find out that he's able to do it because he did not dissent on the issue in the Dominican Republic. And he helps out Johnson in this bill and that bill. Otherwise, he would have to toe the line in the Vietnam issue as well. People my age begin to seriously question the whole system in such conditions.
You're questioning the government of the United States, then?
I really question whether these people are operating, whose interests these people are operating in. That's right.
Well, now, isn't the government of the United States a freely elected government?
Definitely.
Wouldn't they be representing the people?
The elections are free.
Well, why would they carry out something that would be to at a disadvantage to the average American? Would they get us involved in Vietnam? Would they get us involved in the Dominican Republic if it were really bad for America?
Well, it may be in the interest of some Americans' personal self-interest. I don't even know if that's true or not, because I think that the image of the United States abroad is getting worse and worse. And I don't think any Americans can benefit from a bad image of the U.S.
Do you think you're helping the image of the United States by protesting?
If it would have some effect, I think it would. For instance, the youth's work in civil rights certainly did have an effect on the U.S. image abroad. You'll have to admit that. When we try to get reforms through in the South, and they've been very slow in coming, by the way, I don't think the federal government has done a great deal along those lines, except in the cases where they've been absolutely forced to. I think that this has helped the image of the U.S. abroad to a great extent. I've talked to many students from Europe and Japan, places like that, and when they find out that the students are demonstrating here against our Vietnam policy, they certainly think more of the U.S.
They think more of the U.S.?
Yeah, they think that, in fact, the U.S. has really got some good people in it, some people who are morally oriented, as they feel that they are. In the case of students in countries that are totalitarian, where they're not allowed to dissent, when they see American students demonstrating, it has a great effect on them. They think that this is a good thing. It makes them think more of the U.S.
Our guest tonight is Mr. Pat Caywood. Our topic, Why Do I Protest? And our topic, of course, is on the young people of America who are taking to the streets and writing articles, and I guess they're not writing letters anymore, are you, Pat?
No, that's one thing that we've just about given up on. We found out that it didn't work. We even ceased to meet with senators.
Well, Pat is chairman of the Washington Committee during the war in Vietnam. Now, if you'd like to call us at night call, give us a buzz at area code 313-846-6601. You may reverse the charges. And, Pat, we have a caller now in Amherst, Massachusetts, a listener on WBAL in Baltimore, Mr. Robert Olds. Hello, Bob. You're on night call. Your comment, sir.
Yeah, I'd like a type of question from me.
Go right ahead, Bob.
Today, Eric Severin released an article with respect to the negotiations had been attempted by Youth Fox, the UN, for peace in Vietnam. I am a student, and I've been against the shows and displays that have been made by my fellow students. With respect to this whole thing, I feel that if we're committed over there, we ought to carry it through. But it seems that an approach was made to Johnson, and that he turned it down. I'm wondering what your feeling is on this, and just exactly what McNamara's position is in this whole situation, and whether or not he has the ability or the power to convince Johnson of what moves are to be made, because it appears that perhaps Johnson knew nothing about the offer. I'm wondering what the feeling is here. Your people.
Yeah, okay. I feel that Johnson is well informed on the issue of Vietnam and things like negotiations from attempts from Bhutan or from North Vietnam. However, I wish I could cite the date of the Wall Street Journal, wherein it was pointed out that the clamor for negotiations is exactly what the administration wants, because it does not feel that the Viet Cong can afford to negotiate. That is, it feels that negotiations fall into the hands of what Johnson wants to hear. That is, he's in favor of negotiations. Now, in this particular case, I'm not convinced that Johnson will not take this thing up. I don't know. I don't think he will now. I think he feels that he is in a very good position offensively in Vietnam. That is, he thinks that we are gaining ground and going ahead to some extent. And I don't think that he will want to negotiate now, because he will have a better position in the future.
I don't think you're aware of the issue here, however. Did you read the article in the Times today?
In the New York Times today?
Yeah.
No, I didn't read it, no.
Well, it's an article to the effect that Savarite, who you know as our news commentator, he interviewed Stevenson before his death. And Stevenson disclosed that Yusan had made motions a year ago, just about a year ago today.
Yeah.
To the effect that they would like an unconditional conference.
Yeah.
And under any case, whether or not Johnson would accept it, they were willing to apply for a ceasefire to discuss the terms. And Johnson said no, unequivocally.
Yeah. Well, Johnson did have a ceasefire once, didn't he? Remember when he stopped bombing?
How effective was it?
Well...
But this isn't the point, exactly. I think the point is that here was a year ago, and Johnson made all these speeches to the effect that he would negotiate at any time, any place.
But the Vietnam would not. Was that the idea?
Well,
this is another case, then, Pat, of what you were talking about earlier, that you feel that the government may be telling stories to the people.
Well, this has happened many times. This is not an isolated case. Today, in the newspaper, there was an article to the same effect, not from Luton, but through someone else. I don't remember who. The North Vietnamese said that the U.S. could lay out its own terms, and it was ostensibly refused.
Article I'm referring to.
Pardon?
I said this is the same article I'm referring to.
Is that so?
It's in Look magazine.
Well, Bob, do you feel that students have a right to protest this type of action by a government?
I feel up until this point, perhaps not. Now, as I say, I am a student at a fairly reputable college. However, we've had people come up here and talk to us about the same thing, and I've been inclined to, you know, go around and hiss and boo them. However, I did vote for Johnson this past election, and at this point, I feel that I have been sort of... how can you say betrayed? Because although I am a registered Republican, I couldn't vote for Goldwater with any sort of clear consciousness.
Yeah.
And I feel at this point that, in fact, we're following no other practice other than Johnson's. And right now I do feel like getting out there and carrying a sign. And up until this point, I hadn't at all.
Well, what would you say, Bob, if the National Liberation Front or the Viet Cong or the North Vietnamese said that they didn't want to negotiate?
If they themselves did not want to negotiate.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk. There were some women strike people who went to Jakarta and met with people from the National Liberation Front, and the people were very hard line. They said that they felt that they'd had enough warfare for their whole lives, but this one they would fight through to the end.
Look,
that's what these women said who met with the women strike at Jakarta.
Yeah, the initial issue of whether or not we belong there in the first place is a question in my mind. I think perhaps we don't.
Yeah.
And I think we've got ourselves involved in something we really have no right to be involved in.
Right, right.
But the student's issue here, apparently, is this. All right, I can go along with this, and I can understand their thinking. However, I feel we are committed over there. And if Johnson's claims have been true, you know, that he would negotiate at any price, at any time, in all of this business, then we have to go ahead with what we're doing, because we have boys over there, and, you know, boys like myself.
Me too.
And and we have to back them. I mean, they're over there fighting for our right to protest, in fact.
I don't see it that way at all.
Well, I don't understand your thinking.
Well, I don't think they're fighting for American freedom at all. I think they're over there fighting for a toehold in Asia.
Well, then we're talking about political.
Yeah, okay, we shouldn't get off into that.
Sort of reasons, and I think we're variants here.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you... particularly Bob, for calling NICAW. Thank you for your comments.
Fine, thank you.
Mr. Bob Owens from Amherst, Massachusetts, a listener on WBAL
Baltimore. Our guest tonight is Mr. Pat Caywood, and he is the Washington chairman of the Committee to End the War in Vietnam. Our topic, Why Do I Protest? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches. This is Night Call, and here is host Russ Gibb.
Why do I protest? That's our topic on Night Call tonight, and our guest is Mr. Pat Caywood, and Pat is the Washington chairman of the Committee to End the War in Vietnam. Now, if you'd like to make a comment on the Vietnam situation with reference to why are the young Americans seemingly opposing our actions, some of them, I should say, opposing the administration's actions in Vietnam, or ask a question of Mr. Caywood, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, remember, you may dial us direct if you wish, and you may make that call collect. Our number is area code 313-846-6601. And our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. We'd like to hear what you're thinking about. Pat, we have a caller in Denver, Colorado, a gentleman who's listening on KTLN, Mr. Jerry Kennedy. Good evening, Jerry. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Well, thank you, Mr. Gibb. And Mr. Caywood, let me just quickly, if I may refer to your caption, Why Do I Protest? I would like to just make this observation first, that if this is the only relevance of the conversation this evening, I'm afraid it would be rather dry one insofar as I'm concerned, because I think...
I can't hear that too well.
...is very desirable. At all times done with intelligence and, we would hope, demeanor that would suggest some constructive effect.
Could you speak up a little bit?
With that in mind, may I just ask your personal opinion, recognizing it wouldn't be necessary for your entire sitting group, but your personal opinion regarding the well-publicized, although I'm sure very isolated, draft card burning and picketing with signs.
Pat, did you get that?
Yeah, he asked about draft cards and picketing with signs.
Yes, your personal opinion on this.
Right, and personal opinion, but don't try to characterize the movement.
Right, and he stated in the beginning, Jerry stated that he believes that protest does serve a purpose if it's intelligent protest.
Right, right. The two issues, signs and draft card burning, I think are quite separate. The business of carrying signs around the block is an age-old American tradition. We've done it ever all through the labor movement and way before women's suffrage and everything else. The draft card burning is a new issue and a very isolated issue. There haven't been a great number of draft card burners, and there has been no organization of the many, many organizations who have taken a positive stand as far as saying draft card burning is good, let's do it. Personally, I say it's not a particularly valuable means of protest. I think that there are better ways of spending one's time if one wants to convince someone of his position than burning his draft card. It's not good publicity at all. It looks like the guy, well, people interpret it in strange ways. The guy is a coward or something like that. The guy is a nut. If he could avoid, you know, making that kind of impression and rather go out and convince someone of his position within a more rational fashion, I think it'd be a lot better.
Well, Mr. Kaywood, am I talking loudly enough for you to be hearing
now
you?
Now I can hear you. Yes.
Hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, I would agree with you wholeheartedly, and in carrying the latter part of your statement to its obvious conclusion, would you agree with me, at least, that, in fact, protesting to a solution is the only intelligent and rational protesting that is of any consequence? And I have a 5-year-old boy,
wait,
or a 25-year-old girlfriend, or a 75-year-old grandfather, or whatever the case might be. I'm not speaking personally now. If one has this situation, in protesting as such is only the first step. Would you agree with this?
Yes. I didn't hear the first part. You said protesting to an audience?
Protesting to a solution.
To a solution.
In a sense,
protesting,
yes. The protesting is like the noun of the first part of a sentence. Now, that in effect, then, I would ask you this question, following that line of thinking. What specific solutions would your protesting suggest?
Well, in the case of Vietnam protesting or in general?
Well, specifically in the case of Vietnam, I think this is the course of the discussion that you were particularly interested in as chairman.
Yeah, we would like to change the administration's point of view on Vietnam, change their actions in Vietnam.
Well, this is assumed, sir. For purposes of simplification, what specifically do you have in mind?
Oh, you mean as far as what is our ultimate target?
No, specifically, what course of action would you suggest a legally constituted body, if you are aware of law, you would suggest that this body would in fact be in a position to affect themselves, our government, shall we say?
How would you settle Vietnam?
Oh,
that's what he
I'm in favor of withdrawal, immediate withdrawal. However, I have to say before everyone gets excited that immediate withdrawal would always involve negotiations. But I don't think that I need to preface my remarks about withdrawal by saying I really believe in negotiations because I don't think that the U.S. should be there. I'm sure the negotiations would take place if we would withdraw, which probably won't happen. But I do believe in withdrawal and self-determination.
And would I be able to interpret just a little bit, and if I'm incorrect, please clarify for me. You are, in effect, suggesting, then, that a method of tactical military withdrawal be begun and, in fact, consummated, following which there would be negotiations?
Well, no, in the course of a military withdrawal, I can't think of a single withdrawal that didn't have negotiations take place, including when Britain left the U.S.
The logistics matter could be much more easily solved than the one in effect at the present time. I think you're aware of military strategy to that extent. So you're suggesting that military withdrawal and political withdrawal, which would be, in effect, I would suggest, at least married to each other, would then be followed by some form of negotiations. With whom?
With whoever we were talking to, we would have to carry on negotiations with the present South Vietnamese government. We would have to, for some purposes, we'd have to carry on negotiations with the Viet Cong for some purposes, and we'd probably have to carry out negotiations. For some reason, we seem to think we have to carry them out with North Vietnam, China, and the Soviet Union.
Well, what reason do you propose that we have for conducting any negotiations if, in fact, we withdraw?
I can't hear you quite.
He wants to know what reasons would we have for carrying on negotiations with anyone if, in fact, we withdraw.
Oh, well, we'd always want to have our interests represented there in any possible way we could. If we were going to leave a country, we would want to influence that country in the best way that we could. I would say we had decided on a different way of influencing them, much as France has in Algeria and in Vietnam. They withdrew, but they left plenty of feelers to retain their influence there.
Jerry, we have other callers waiting. I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Well, thank you, Mr. Gibbs. I had other questions, but I'm sure they'll be asked by other persons. I'm very appreciative of the time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Jerry Kennedy, a very perceptive listener in Denver, Colorado, listening on KTLM. And let's go back out to Denver. Mrs. Norma Harper. Good evening, Mrs. Harper. You're on night call, ma'am. Your comment, please.
On the subject of Vietnam, first of all, I wish to state that I'm a registered Democrat also and also voted for President Johnson. And I am greatly troubled by this Vietnam situation because I think it's time we get out of this emotional pattern and get right down to cases on this thing on a realistic level. And it occurs to me, suppose we were to win an all-out victory, which is quite an interesting situation, and we then take over Vietnam. What do we do? Occupy it for many, many years, with the Vietnam still at the borders, able to, the minute we take our armies out, they will still engulf. What do we really ultimately gain? And I want you to know that I'm very much pro-American.
Right.
And I think we have to look at this very realistically. And
Norma, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Why did you feel that you had to say that you were very pro-American?
Because all these demonstrations, sometimes communists do take place in these emotional placards, and they say, well, if they want withdrawal, they must be communist-inspired. That's the stock idea.
So you feel you felt you had to justify?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And I have read the very, I want to make, I also am a great, I want you to know that I admire Mr. McNamara. I have read up on his background of history. He's a very brilliant young man. The late President Kennedy did not know Robert McNamara probably as well as most people realize. When he was selected, he was, as everyone knows, with a Ford Motor Company, as I say, a brilliant young man. I don't think he relates down to the people idea too much, however. And I know he's, we're very privileged to have this man as the head of our government, but I would also question his humanism in some respects. Although, as I say, he's a brilliant technician, and we're privileged to have this man. And I'm hoping that we will get down to realistic levels and retreat, not retreat, but withdraw with honor. But not give way.
Okay. Well, Pat, yeah. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, okay. I'm pro-American, too.
Good.
Mrs. Harper, is that your name?
Yes.
I would possibly be drafted in case of a draft business. Many of my friends are in Vietnam, and some of them have been hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants this. I'm sure this is your orientation, too, but nobody likes this. I'm very positive about my approach toward Vietnam. I think that I don't like guys being hurt. In that sense, I'm positive. I want them to be home and be safe. And as far as if we pulled out, Mrs. Harper, who would overrun this country? I think that our stand is correct in the case of Hitler in Europe. If Hitler overruns Europe, we certainly should stop him. And if someone else overruns Vietnam, we should stop them. See what I mean?
Yes, and I would take a strong stand against any force or faction that would want to overrun our country.
Well, no, I didn't mean our country. I meant Vietnam.
Oh.
Well, I mean, obviously with our country, too. But in the case of Vietnam, I would think that it would be our right to protect a country that was being overrun by a foreign power.
If I leave them unprotected, I wouldn't withdraw that much. I would withdraw by degrees only, leaving them protected each step of the way.
Well, that doesn't, one way or another, if we were out, I would still be in favor of protecting a country from being overrun by another country.
Absolutely.
However, that situation does not prevail today.
That's true.
See, we have two zones of one country that we've tried to make two countries out of, and then pretend like, with lying through our teeth, trying to pretend like one country is invading another country. And when we can't prove that,
realistic at this point, I think we have got to reach a point of realism and not be so. We simply are not going to frighten anyone with a big stick, and nor are they going to frighten us. So I think we must get to the point of absolute realism at this point.
Ms. Harper, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you very much.
Lady expressing her opinion from Denver, Colorado, listening on KTLN.
Our guest tonight is Mr. Pat Kaywood, and our topic, Why Do I Protest? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where you get the idea you can make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your
proceeding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our guest tonight is chairman of the Washington Committee to End the War in Vietnam, Mr. Pat Caywood. And our topic, why do I protest? Now, if you'd like to join us here on Night Call, we invite you to do so. Just dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, gentle people, you may call from anywhere in the United States collect. Now, please make that call station to station. Our number, area code 313-846-6601. And remember, you may reverse the charges. Pat, I have a caller in Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL, Mr. Bob Creedle. Good evening, Bob. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Good evening, Russ. I just direct several different things, such as comments and questions to your guests.
Go right ahead, Bob.
First of all, do you believe, or do you have any idea that this might be publicity, more or less, the protest, as you call them?
What was your question again?
Do you believe that these protests might be more of a publicity-happy gimmick for these students?
Well, I can tell you very directly, since I'm an organizer of them, what the purposes of them are. And there are several purposes, the main purposes. The first one is publicity, to attract attention to an issue, hoping that people will begin to look into it. Another is... along the same line, to get people to know that there is a movement alive, and those who are interested can then seek out this movement and join it, see, or many movements. Another one is that the participants, we spend many months, all winter long, working, educating, talking to people, speaking, debating, and it's really nice for us all around the country to get together and have a big demonstration. It makes everyone feel good. We exchange ideas. We see one another. And at the same time, we serve this purpose of publicizing our ideas. That's my answer to your question.
Bob?
Now, the question I believe was almost asked to you, or you almost answered it for me earlier with this lady from Denver. What I want to ask you is, if you were drafted, which I've gathered that you have not yet served the Army.
Right. Correct.
If you are drafted and sent to Vietnam, will you fight?
Yes.
You will?
Yes.
But yet everything that you're doing right now is against it.
Right. I don't believe it's a moral war.
Well, I think Bob's asking the question why. This seems like an inconsistency. In one area, you're saying it's wrong, therefore we shouldn't be involved, and then you turn around and...
It's a tactical reason. It's a tactical reason. If I refuse to go and I go to jail, I'm not going to be doing anybody any good sitting in jail by myself. If I go to Vietnam and come out alive, it's possible that when I get back, I can do further work and trying to end the war in Vietnam. If I go there, I certainly would learn more and more about Vietnam. And unfortunately, I wouldn't like doing it, but that's the way I feel about it. I don't feel that individual acts of extreme morality, like burning draft cards, self-immolation, and going to jail, are really the best tactic for trying to convince people of my point of view.
But, Pat, don't you find that many people in the press lump all protesters into one mold?
Yes.
That's the fact that you're more or less all of the same ilk.
Well, I think that my opinion characterizes the people, most of the people in the movement, to be honest with you.
In other words, you're not a beatnik.
I certainly don't think so.
But we tend to have them pictured in cartoons with long beards and
I shave daily and I dress very neatly in a suit and tie.
Well, you're not fitting the stereotype then, Pat.
That's a fact.
Well, but why don't you just take the word, Pat, why don't you just take the word of the government of the United States? This interests me.
Well, the same reason that Bob Owens got upset, the first caller tonight. He saw a crack in the picture window. He read through Eric Severide that, in fact, negotiations had been attempted. Our government had contact with our government had been attempted by the National Liberation Front, and we flatly turned them down. And at the same time, we were saying that they would not negotiate. In other words, it becomes clear that the U.S. did not want to negotiate, but at the same time, they wanted to counter the arguments in favor of negotiations from the protesters at home. They're being dishonest. And when Bob Owens sees this, he gets upset, and he begins to wonder about the great authority figure in Washington, D.C. And that's the same business. We have all gone through some crack in the picture window, like the U2 affair, like...
In other words, you're saying you're disenchanted with official Washington.
Well, we quit respecting official Washington as being the last word in truth and honesty, and we begin to think that we have to seek it out ourselves.
Does anybody do anything right in Washington?
Pardon me?
Does anyone do anything right in Washington?
I'm sure they do, yeah. I've picked up many publications that's put out by Washington that I think are terrific.
I was starting to wonder. Pat, you said withdrawal. Do you mean total withdrawal?
Yeah, I think that we should allow self-determination of all nations as we were allowed in 1700s.
Now, you put yourself in the position of some of these people in the Vietnam villages. Would you want the United States to come out of there?
If I put myself in the position of a Vietnamese...
That's right. Would you want the United States to come out of there?
To the best of my study...
The protection for your life?
If you read the papers carefully and you study the situation carefully, I don't think you'll find that the U.S. is protecting villages from the Viet Cong. See, the Viet Cong are villagers. That's a very important distinction to make.
Well, omit the word village then. Just say a Vietnamese, a South Vietnamese.
Right.
It is on the more or less... they want the same thing that the civil rights movement wants, their freedom.
Say it again.
Well, they want the same thing that the civil rights people want, freedom. This is
I think that, well, if you're wondering what the demands of the average Vietnamese peasant are, you're going to have to go further than that. In fact, if you check into the cause of the most recent war, you find that the basic demands of the Vietnamese peasant are land and freedom. And the loss of freedom in South Vietnam occurred under a U.S.-sponsored dictator. Ngo Dinh Diem was his name.
Bob, what do you think about that?
So what you say we do is pull out of Vietnam completely. And
yes.
The communists take over.
Which communists?
Or the Viet Cong. Which has to be, or more or less, is influenced by the communists in some way.
I didn't hear that last part.
I say the Viet Cong must be or are influenced by the communists in some way.
Are intimate with the communists?
Influenced.
Oh, influenced. Oh, the Viet Cong are mostly communists, I'm pretty sure, whatever kind of communists they happen to be.
So what you're saying is we pull out of Vietnam and let the communists take over.
Yeah, I would call the Viet Cong extremists. And I would say that many of them are communists in their own funny little way. But I would say that we and the French in the past 20 years have created Vietnamese extremists. Our own actions have made people go to the extreme of taking up arms against their government. I say us and the French. I don't say just us. It was a long period of time over which the Vietnamese people became extremists.
Well, Bob, I want to thank you for calling NICOR, and thank you for your comments, sir.
Yeah, I'm still a little blurred about it.
Well, I think many Americans are, Bob. Mr. Bob Creedle from Baltimore, Maryland, listening on WBAL. And let's go out to Portsmouth, New Hampshire. A listener on WBAL. I see. He's off the line. Let's go then to Baltimore, Maryland. Again, a gentleman listening on WBAL. Captain Frank Brown. Good evening, Captain. You're on night call, sir.
Good evening.
Your comment, please.
Good evening.
Yes, I'm here.
I'd like to ask you, don't you consider the protesters against our involvement in Vietnam on the edge of American public opinion?
On the edge of American public opinion? Yes, I don't think that we're in a majority by any means. I think we're in a minority. Absolutely. No doubt about it. One-fifth at the most at the present time.
Captain?
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I think if you'll turn your radio down, Captain, you won't be confused.
Okay.
Did he hear that?
I'm not sure. I think he was listening on the delay.
Oh.
And that's what was confusing Captain Brown. Captain?
Yes.
You had another comment.
Yes. I just asked the commentator if he didn't consider the protesters somewhat on the fringe edge of American public opinion, somewhat in the same line as the American firsters were before World War II.
American firsters. Well, I don't want to compare our movement with theirs because it's different. It's completely different in most respects. But, of course, we are in a minority, and probably one-fifth of the people at the most are with us. The movement is growing. Let's not kid ourselves, though. The American press did not point that out in these past demonstrations, but you'll find that the European press did point that out.
Captain?
Yes.
Do you have any other questions that you'd like to direct?
My comment is, what do you think self-determination would accomplish in Vietnam, and how would your self-determination be carried out?
Well, now you've come...
Who would control it?
Who would control Vietnam?
Yes. If self-determination was to be realized in Vietnam, as you apparently advocate...
Yes.
Under whose auspices would this self-determination be carried out, and who would oversee it?
Well, we can go into all kinds of theories as to which Vietnamese, whether it's Ho Chi Minh or someone else, would be in charge of the whole country or whatever. But if we really adhere to the principle of self-determination, it's not our choice. Now, if you'd like my own political analysis of what I think would happen, that's a different matter. But I don't think that the U.S. should base its action in Vietnam on who inside Vietnam would come to power. That's a moral question. The U.S. is based on the principle, that is, our freedom, our independence in 1776, was based on the principle of self-determination. If France would have looked inside, looked into the U.S. and decided that whoever was going to come to power didn't suit them, and on that basis intervened, it would have been pretty bad. And that is essentially what your question is saying. We're supposed to look in and decide who's going to come to power, and on that basis decide whether to withdraw or not.
Do we not face a different situation now than we did in 1776, or indeed than mentioned it in 1776?
You mean because there wasn't communism then, but there is now?
Yes.
I think if you listen to the British at that time, read some of their things, you'll find that the spreading of the French Revolution and the various denunciations of it by the British and various other countries sound very much like the denunciations of communism today. As the French Revolution put a scare through many people, many countries in Europe, and sure enough, we find out that the British made the same kind of statements about the French spreading their revolution to the United States, and as we do today, talking about Russia and China spreading their revolution all over.
Captain Brown, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Thank you for your comments, sir. Gentleman from Baltimore, Maryland, listening on WBAL.
Guest tonight is Mr. Pat Kaywood. He is the chairman of the Washington Committee to End the War in Vietnam. Our topic, Why Do I Protest? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America! Busy America! Busy making money! Busy buying gadgets! Busy keeping up with you know who!
Is that your idea of fulfillment?
Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line? Where do you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our guest tonight, Mr. Pat Kaywood. Our topic, Why Do I Protest? And you're tuned, of course, to the Night Call show, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Now, our national number is area code 313-846-6601. And remember, gentle people, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges. Now, please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. And if you get a busy signal, please do not become discouraged. Just hang up and dial us again. That's area code 313-846-6601. And we're talking, of course, about student demonstrators. And we're talking to a gentleman who has demonstrated, Mr. Pat Kaywood. Pat, I have a caller in Logan, Utah now, a listener on KVNU, Mr. Jim Wangsgaard. Hello, Jim. You're on Night Call.
Thank you very much. My comments are going to be short and sweet. I was very much uninformed on the Vietnam situation. In fact, been uninterested on it until during the last election when I was caught by Richard Nixon's comments on the national television network when he stated that if we drew out of South Vietnam, then Vietnam would surely fall to the communists, and that would give them a stronghold in Southeast Asia, when they, and therefore they would take over all of Southeast Asia. And they would leave. That would leave them, or us, with a very uncomfortable position, having them that close to the Philippines. So is that correct? Did Richard Nixon correctly inform us, or was he just trying to scare me?
Jim, do they call that the domino theory?
A big part?
Is that what's known as the domino theory? Maybe Pat knows the answer to that.
Yes. That is the domino theory.
At least that's a tag that politicians have given it.
I think the question is very equivocal, and it's stated that way intentionally by people like Richard Nixon. Because, in fact, what we find is not one country aggressing against another country and making a communist country out of it. We find that China had a revolution practically unaided by outside force, essentially unaided. All historians will agree with this. Now we have Vietnam that went communist unaided, completely unaided by an outside force. Now, South Vietnam, which we segmented, is starting to go communist. There's a possibility of it, and I think Richard Nixon would be correct that in some way it would be communist in some interpretation of the word communist if we pulled out of there. However, I don't think this means that Vietnam would have troops ready to move across into the Philippines and things like that. And I don't think they would move troops across into Thailand. Now, if those countries are very poverty-stricken, and I don't think the Philippines falls into the classification of povertiousness as does Thailand, perhaps, or Vietnam. There's a good chance that revolutions will begin to occur in those countries. But don't blame it on Vietnamese, because the Vietnamese would not be there. Don't blame it on the Chinese. that Vietnam had a communist revolution, there are very specific conditions that created the revolutionary situation. Now, as far as the other Southeast Asian countries being afraid of this, Thailand, which is admittedly an American puppet, it's quite openly admitted, says that they are afraid of that. On the other hand, Prime Minister Shastri unequivocally stated in a radio program, a TV program, a couple of months ago, that if the U.S. pulled out and Vietnam went communist, he does not fear any kind of communist aggression from Vietnam. He stated this unequivocally, and he said that undoubtedly it would be some sort of communist regime, Titoist perhaps in nature, and he does not fear such an occurrence.
Jim?
Yes.
What do you think about that?
Well, I don't... he doesn't think that there would be a threat to our national security if all of Vietnam fell to the communist plan. He does not think that...
I think that's what he's saying to you, Jim.
Well, put it this way. I don't fall prey to any kind of communist propaganda falling on coming in through Radio Free Moscow or whatever it is. If the people in the Philippines have such a grim life that they fall prey to this kind of propaganda, then I would say that maybe this little protectorate of the United States must have some sort of economic and social problems that we should take care of. Because you'll find in every case that unless there is a serious problem in a country, they do not begin to believe the ideas of Marx and communism.
Jim, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Jim Wangsgaard from Logan, Utah, listening on KVNU. Now, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
If we didn't have Vietnam, if this were not a national issue right now, would you be protesting something else, do you think?
I didn't go down to Mississippi a couple of years ago when a lot of young people did, although I did protest locally in Washington, D.C., and in San Francisco and in Portland, Oregon, on specific little segregation issues. I did protest on certain issues like
that. Why do you do this, Pat?
Because I am morally perturbed.
What do you mean, morally perturbed?
Yes, I'm morally upset. Things like that bother me.
Why?
It goes against everything I was taught. I was taught in school that people are, and in my home and my church, that people are supposed to be allowed freedom and the ability to choose what they want to eat, sleep, and
even if that choice is communism, you believe that they have the right?
A given country has a right to choose its own system of government.
Even if it's communism?
Even if it's communism. If it's imposed on the outside, that's a different question. But let's state clearly whether we mean, whether it's an internal revolution or imposed from the outside. Let's state that clearly.
Now, if it's imposed from the outside, I take it that you're opposed to it.
I am for self-determination, as I said several times, and that is not self-determination when it's imposed from the outside.
But do you think that you can really have more information than the government? I keep going back to this point.
No, the government is not misinformed. That is not, I do not believe that.
Well, then why do you not go along with government policy?
Well, it depends on which situation. Now, why did we intervene in Santo Domingo? Why do we back various reactionary regimes in South America? Why do we not, for instance, back the peasants in Peru? That would be a very interesting thing. We have opportunity now to back the peasants in Peru who have a very unhappy situation. There are specific reasons in all different cases, different reasons here, different reasons there. And in the case of Vietnam, we are trying to ring China with large air bases, and we don't care what we have to do to the Vietnamese people to do it. See, so we're not ill-informed on the business.
Well, let's not talk about the issues. Let's talk about the why, though. I'm concerned. Is this a characteristic of your generation? Do you think that a lot of American kids today are disenchanted with the establishment?
Yes, I think that this is a new generation from the old one. There's been a lot written on this, a lot of articles written, and I agree that this is a different generation. What it was that caused it, I'm not sure. Maybe the threat of the bomb, that's what some people say. I don't think that myself. This generation has a lot of courage. It's a strange thing, but they are willing to stand up to their parents and to the government and say their little piece.
Now, you say stand up to their parents. Do you think that possibly your activities are more or less an extension of adolescence?
Well, I don't think so, see, because one has to break from his parents before he can finally speak his own mind and make up his own mind. It was a very difficult thing for me to do what I do, to protest. it's very difficult when I had to make the final decision whether I'm going to do something that's against the wishes of my parents or not.
Well, Pat, let's go to Troy, New York now, listener on WBAL, Mr. Howard Olson. Good evening, Howard. You're on night call, sir.
I would like to ask your protege there what exactly he thinks is the status, or the makeup, rather, of the Viet Cong forces.
In the National Liberation Front, Viet Cong was is a euphemism. But,
I realize
but
that.
We know who we're talking about. In the Viet Cong of the National Liberation Front, there are various nationalists in the organization. Most of them are pro-Ho Chi Minh, the so-called president of North Vietnam. However, and I believe that it is communist-dominated in a sense. I don't like to use that term because it's very monolithic sounding, but it is for the most part communist-dominated.
Howard?
Yes. I was just wondering, how do you account for the presence of a minimum of 6 of North Vietnamese regular infantry battalions in the area?
Well,
of South Vietnam.
How do I account for them?
Yes.
I didn't hear how you phrased it. A minimum?
A minimum of 6, yes. This is, as of 3 weeks ago, I spoke with a special forces officer who had returned from Vietnam, South Vietnam, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. In other words, you're implying that it's a small number compared to what the government's been telling us for 6 years.
No, I'm not implying it's a small number. I'm saying that, first of all, in 61, the North Vietnamese government sent in a large number. You see, you're not making the distinction, if you talk about a guerrilla warfare or National Liberation Front, between guerrilla warfare such as was fought by the French in World War II against the Germans.
Right.
Which is a true guerrilla warfare.
Well, that's an underground war, at least.
That's an underground war.
Right.
Gentlemen, I got to warn you, you have just a minute remaining.
Against an invader. Now, a guerrilla-type war, such as was also fought by Castro in Cuba.
Uh-huh.
And is currently being fought in Vietnam, South Vietnam, by, I'll use a term which you may not agree with, may not like, Shycom.
I don't know the term.
Chinese communist.
In Vietnam?
In Vietnam.
No.
Howard, just a minute.
Well, we have about 15 seconds, gentlemen.
Yes.
Howard, make your point.
You have to give me some authority on that, and I've read them all.
The Chinese communists have been arming and supplying with uniforms and elementary medical aid the North Vietnamese and
yes.
the, quote, Viet Cong.
Yes, honest.
Mr. Olson, I'm sorry we have no more time remaining on night call. I'm
okay.
Sorry we can't continue this. Mr. Howard Olson, a gentleman calling from Troy, New York, listening on WBAL. And, Pat, I'm sorry we don't have any more time, but I want to thank you for being our guest on night call.
Thank you, Russ.
Our guest, Mr.
Pat Kaywood. Wednesday night, our guest is Mr. Tom Charles Houston. He's the president of the Young Americans for Freedom. Our topic, Why Do I Protest? Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.